Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Mark, who is listening to the show this morning, as we now enter morning for a good portion of the United States. Not all of you, but most of you. He thinks that Sheila should be grandfathered in for Facepalm Friday. But of course, she became one of the reasons why we instituted it. Actually, she was my inspiration. But yes, Sheila, who believes that she should be in the Football Hall of Fame, not the After Hours Hall of Flame, but the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I haven't heard from her in a while. I feel like she only calls when she wants to state her case. And then once her case is made, once her plea is made, she's out. But Mark thinks he should make that his ringtone. Sheila's call. Man alive, that would only work for me for, well, not even a day. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It is a Facepalm Friday, so you can find me on Twitter. Use the hashtag Facepalm Friday. It is my favorite feature that we do on the show. When we're not doing Hall of Flame, we haven't done an After Hours Hall of Flame in a long time. So we'll see if we can get that together for next week. That's my favorite, but we don't do that every week. So I missed Facepalm Friday. Well, okay, that's not actually entirely accurate. I missed it when I thought about it during the day on Thursday before I went to bed and slept 10 hours. It was my birthday weekend, so I was pretty thrilled to have the time off and to be able to sleep and do a whole lot of nothing with my family for my birthday. But when I did think about it, I was like, oh, it's a Facepalm Friday. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. And then on our Facebook page, like I mentioned, Mark posted, and I see a bunch of you who are weighing in about what is sure to be, a thrilling sports weekend. And, you know, I love the weekends. Let me just be honest here. But certainly a lot of what takes place on Friday or even Saturday will be old news by the time we get back to the show and back together on Sunday night. Sometimes I'm like, there's this twinge. Like, man, it'd be kind of fun to be able to talk about that. That's what Twitter's for, though. So you can make sure you follow me, and we have this ongoing conversation. I've been tweeting a ton about hockey, and it's like people are just, what? Well, I thought, what? Yes, we do talk about hockey. See, I told you. And coming up, we'll do one of our hockey countdowns. There are five games, though, so it's kind of hard. I'm grouping them together here and there because there are common themes. But, yeah, it was a busy night on the ice with five more series openers. The NBA postseason starts on Saturday, and then the other four series will begin on Sunday. So looking forward to that to kind of get our first taste of things and how this is going to play out. And that's the ebb and flow. You see one game, and then it could be completely different in the second game. But according to our polls, it's a slim margin in the Eastern Conference you're most looking forward to, that series between the Sixers and the Heat. Again, slim margin. For a while, the Sixers and Heat was languishing in last place, of course, because it was the one that I voted for. But it's relatively tight. So you've got 30% say Philly and Miami, but then 26% say Cleveland, Indiana. And then Boston, Milwaukee, not that far behind. Right now in fourth place, but still getting 20% of the vote, is Toronto and Washington. And that series has, I think, a lot on the line for both franchises. Now, I get it. Everybody's trying to win a title, so hear me out. For the Raptors, this is another big deal for them. They get the number one seed, a step forward. But it's going to mean absolutely nothing if they fall short of the NBA Finals again. And because they got the number one seed and the Cavaliers got the four seed, if the Raptors and Cavs advance, meaning they both get out of the first round, they're going to meet each other again. But it's like exercising your demons. Maybe the Capitals would like to avoid the Penguins, but there would be a great amount of satisfaction if they could finally beat their nemesis, at least of the last couple of years. And for the Raptors, it would be a banner moment in their franchise history if, and that's a big if, they could finally beat the Cavs. But regardless, they'll take it however it comes. So for the Raptors, there's so much on the line. Getting to the East Finals 2 years ago, last year running into the Cavs in what, the second round, getting ousted again, and in that time it was a sweep. And now here they are as the one seed. They've got a fantastic home court advantage. The fans are nutso for their Raptors, we the North. But they're taking on a team in the Wizards that I don't really know how they got to be the eighth seed. Now, John Wall's health is a large part of that. But this core for the Wizards is a veteran, experienced, playoff-ready team. And so there were a lot of inconsistencies. And missing your all-star, your all-world point guard is a big deal. Trying to bring him back to the point where he's ready to go without overtaxing him. But this is also another huge year for the Wizards. Can they get farther than they were a year ago? So it was a 7-game series with the Celtics in the second round, remember? The Wizards keep running into that same ceiling. So here are the Raptors and the Wizards, who both desperately would like to break out. And they're running into each other in that first round. And so even as the eighth seed, you know the Wizards are dangerous because of their experience, regardless of the numbers in front of their names. I mean, this is, I think, a Wizards team that can be really dangerous.
You go to win. You don't go there to split. You go there to win the first game, and you do everything you have in your power and what you can control to win that first game. There's no question. You want to play good basketball and give yourself a chance to win every night you play in the playoffs. It's always difficult. Toronto's had a great year, and they deserve to be number one seed.
Head coach Scott Brooks, you go there to split. So that's the idea. Grab the home court advantage, winning at least one of those games on your opponent's court, and you can flip the series on its head right away. Now for Kyle Lowry, actually for both backcourts, certainly you've got two high profile backcourts with these two teams. Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Bradley Beal, John Wall, they've been together for several years now. They can be dynamic. But Lowry has had some really miserable games in the postseason. There have been times when he's almost been non-existent, which is so odd. It's head-scratching that both he and DeRozan at times have seemed to disappear in the postseason. I like the fact that their core has been together now for more than a year. They got Serge Ibaka. They introduced him into the mix last season at the trade deadline. These guys should have, I think should and do, it's evidenced by the fact that they're the number one seed. They should have some of the best chemistry in the NBA playoffs because of their longevity. And now again in the playoffs. And so it's a matter of performing. There's going to be some mental aspects to it, but it's about just going out there on the court and doing what you know you can do. And it's hard. We're human beings, right? We don't ever come into a situation with a spotless mind. Remember that movie, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind? Life isn't like that. We bring with it all of our past, all of our failures, all of our successes, our weaknesses, our strengths, our positives, our negatives, our confidence, but also there are doubts because we're human beings and there's no way you can just act like the past didn't happen. Now, you can learn from it. You can use it to motivate you. You can want so desperately to get some redemption for those failures, to change the storyline, that it can be powerful for you, not just as motivation, but to spur you on. And maybe that's the case now with Kyle Lowry and with the Raptors.
We go in there and just, we're confident in what we've been doing all year. And, we understand what they present to us, what challenges they present. And we got to go out there, game plan, and make sure we follow the game plans to a T and play our type of game. But our home court, we got that. We have to go out there and protect it. It's not going to protect us. We got to go protect it. Yeah.
They made it pretty clear they wanted the home court advantage in the number one seed. That was important to them. You don't often get a team acting like it's important or admitting that it's important. But for them, big deal. And they do have a great home court advantage. They have now for a couple of years, but this year specifically, one of the best in the league. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio inside the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Washington, Toronto tips off in the second game coming up on Saturday. The first is San Antonio and Golden State, which I find fascinating that it's the first game coming from Golden State, from Oakland at Oracle. And it's a noontime start there, which is a little bit odd, right? I mean, there are some nationally televised games every now and then on the weekends. But generally, they're East Coast games because they start at like 1 o'clock or so. Now, every now and then, you'll have a 3 o'clock Eastern time start. And so that then could be a West Coast game. But it's a different deal to tip off at noon in your arena. We'll see if the fans are just as loud. They don't have as much time to get their vocal cords warmed up. But yeah, Spurs and Warriors, and this is the series that you all say that you're most interested in the Western Conference, which I think is interesting because they're missing two of their highest profile players in this series.
No, why not?
Well, we don't think Kawhi Leonard is going to be playing. Haven't heard hide nor hair of him since the last report that he and his camp were in New York, that they weren't even with the team, and that he just wasn't ready to come back. But 37% of you say this is the series that you're most looking forward to in the West. So minus Steph Curry and minus Kawhi Leonard. Curry! Could it be more even this way? I mean, the Spurs have gotten a great second half out of LaMarcus Aldridge. Patty Mills has really stepped into the quarterback role. Obviously, DeJounte Murray. They've reinvented themselves. Their defense has been the focus in the second half, and it's worked. After that abysmal rodeo road trip, they really got to the point where they looked more like the steady Spurs of old. As for the Warriors, they've been wildly inconsistent. I mean, plenty of examples that you could do a Facepalm Friday just on the Warriors. 75 points in one of their recent game against the Spurs. 75 points.
You know, you shake it off.
They just got blasted by 40 in their last game against Utah. That's how they ended the regular season. They got blasted by 40. And no, it wasn't because they were resting all their starters. Nah, they had their other three, their other big three next to Steph Curry. They've now navigated a ton of injuries. But there are times where you just can't figure out what's going on with them. Their offense doesn't click, and they seem to get stuck, as opposed to going back to what should open up the offense, the ball movement, the run game. They kind of keep forcing shots that just aren't falling. And obviously we know when their threes don't fall, they look like a completely different team. But they've got such talented guys. They don't need to shoot the three to win. Yes, it's a great weapon, but without Steph, it's not nearly as effective because he provides such another lethal option. And so I'm maybe in the minority here, but I think I'm mildly concerned about what we might see from the Warriors in this postseason. Steph's not going to return for this first round series, according to Steve Kerr. We'll see if they flip a switch. But their own coach called them pathetic not that long ago. Too much about them getting humiliated and embarrassed this season. And he even said 58 wins. It's maybe good enough for other teams, but it's a disappointment for us. So we're about to get underway. That's the first game of the NBA postseason on Saturday, again, with a noon start on the West Coast. So you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Coming up, we'll dive into a little bit of the Knicks situation because they've fired their head coach. A lot of names being floated out there. But why did they make this change? And five more series openers with some really cool storylines on the ice Thursday night. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Here's Amy Lawrence.
I just happened to open up the website E Online. The top four stories, they have a countdown of the top four stories. They're all about Khloe Kardashian and Tristan Thompson. Heavens. Hashtag Facepalm Friday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. I always appreciate your new follows. And there's a plethora of news to wrap up the work week. We had this breaking news when we came on the air just over 24 hours ago that the New York Knicks had informed their head coach, Jeff Hornacek, they would be relieving him of his duties. This was right after they returned from their final road trip to Cleveland. And Hornacek himself had talked about how it was a disappointing year, that it wasn't exactly what they wanted. They certainly didn't meet their goals in terms of wins and losses, but that he felt like the team worked hard all the way through, never stopped trying to get better, which I don't know if their body language would tell the same story. Well, Steve Mills, the president of the New York Knicks, was talking on Thursday about why, after two seasons, they felt like it was the right time to look for a new head coach.
Scott and I made a decision that we just felt like it was, given how the season was progressing, and we progressed in some areas, but we felt we were lacking in others. We came to the conclusion that it was the time for sort of a new voice with our locker room, a new presence with our players.
Steve Mills, the president, referring to the general manager, Scott Perry. If you dig a little deeper into the press conference or read some of the stories, this is a familiar theme when it comes to new coaches needing to understand today's athlete, needing to be able to relate to today's athlete, needing to speak the same language. And he kind of says that about the voice, right? Mills talked about how today's players are very different from the guys that Jeff Hornacek played with when he was in the NBA. You have to be a person, I'm quoting here, you have to be a person that understands who these guys are, where they come from, what their basketball journey is. And then he also mentions analytics, developing guys physically, using analytics, and that a good coach is willing to embrace all aspects. It's not a coincidence, in my opinion, that the two baseball teams in New York just hired brand new managers who were A, younger, and B, more willing to listen to, communicate, and relate to, embrace the baseball players of today. So that's a common theme now for three of New York's pro sports teams. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Certainly not unique to New York, but it is interesting that the Yankees, the Mets, and now the Knicks have all replaced coaches who they felt like couldn't speak to, relate to, identify with today's athletes. Now, in the case of the two baseball managers, there was a lot of success there with Terry, with Girardi. There was a success, a track record. That's not the case with Jeff Hornacek. He was hired by Phil Jackson. He lasted 2 years, only 60 wins, 104 losses. But, I mean, let's keep in mind what was happening around him, a revolving door in the front office, a revolving door of players as well. And then Kristaps Porzingis, his best player, ends up tearing his ACL in, was it January, I think? And so there's just been a whole bunch of turmoil, really difficult to establish any consistency or a winning tradition or a foundation when everything around you is shifting sand. However, I'm not sure he was the right fit from the beginning, considering who brought him in, Phil Jackson. So Scott Perry, then the general manager, tried to answer some of the questions about the coaching search. Names out there like Mark Jackson, Jerry Stackhouse, Doc Rivers, who I just saw a report from David Aldridge, NBA TV, that Doc is going to stay with the Clippers despite not making the postseason. So I don't know if that's an option, but people just throwing names out there of guys who might be available or who might be interested in taking this job, who might be good fits.
No timetable. You know, we're just going to obviously, you know, get to work on that very soon. I'm sure it's a very competitive market out there, but we're going to do our due diligence and take the time necessary to find the right guy that we feel to take us this next on this a long journey, hopefully.
Yeah, except that it hasn't been a long journey for any of the recent head coaches. And the Knicks have just one playoff series win in the past 18 years. Has it really been that long? Holy cow. 18 seasons, they've got just one playoff win. worst winning percentage among NBA teams that have played every season since 2000-2001. So going back now nearly two decades, so past 18 seasons, they've got the worst winning percentage among the teams who have played all the way through.
Nerd alert.
Yeah. Nerd alert and a bite me together. Boom. We like our combos. Plus, it's a Facepalm Friday. After hours here on CBS Sports Radio. So he, Scott, is referring to this idea that they want to bring in a coach that's going to last for a long time, which is certainly the ideal, the pie in the sky, and yet the Knicks haven't been committed to that. In fact, Perry and Mills haven't been there that long, for heaven's sakes, at least not in these current jobs. So what about trying to build this winning culture and a foundation and turning the Knicks around?
There are no quick fixes, and you don't see them around. And so I know that has been tried a number of times here in the past, but I think it's important that we as an organization and Steve and I as leaders in the front office remain disciplined to that.
Did you know that David Fizdale is available? Did you know that David Blatt is now coaching in Turkey? So he's back in Europe coaching again.
Take that for that.
Jerry Stackhouse is the head coach of Toronto's G League team. And then Mark Jackson, obviously, has been a basketball analyst for a long time. Any wild guesses as to how many coaches the Knicks have had since the 2000-2001 season? Again, that's the 18 years in which they've had just one playoff series win, and they've had the worst winning percentage, the lowest winning percentage among teams that have played consistently that entire time. Any guesses? Don't look. Just guess. How many head coaches since the 2000-2001 season?
17.
Tom.
9?
It's in between that. 11 will be the next higher. 11 head coaches in 18 seasons.
That hasn't been fun.
Oh, my gosh. And they've had probably triple the number of players come through in just the last, decade, it feels like. It's been a nonstop revolving door. And so the Knicks are a mess. I mean, there are teams out there that you can look at, and you know that the transition is part of the problem, the constant turnover and transition. And the Knicks now fit that pattern. They fit that mold. All right, coming up, we'll strap on the skates. I really hope I don't take a puck to the face, but that's always a possibility. How incredibly tough is Nick Foligno, the captain of the Columbus Blue Jackets, in the third period against the Capitals, a third period of what was a game in which they were trailing by one goal? Third period, he gets hit in the face by a puck. It strikes his visor. He had to fix his visor, but he's back in after, I think it was just a few shifts, and he was back on the ice. Okay, tough guy.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Well, Sidney Crosby started us off in the postseason right with a hat trick, but the Penguins, the defending champs, were not on the ice. Thursday night, we had five other series openers and some drama in the East. Now, you know, the top two teams in the East, they went back and forth over the course of the last month or so. When the Bruins started to play really well, they put pressure on the Lightning, and it went down to the final day before the Lightning could secure the top seed. Those teams were both on the ice, as were Alex Ovechkin's Capitals against an upstart Columbus Blue Jackets team, and then a pair of games in the Western Conference. So it was busy. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We've got another Facepalm Friday coming up here in moments, but we strapped on the skates, even though I look like a baby giraffe in skates. We'll let the pros do the real thing. And when it comes to those top two teams in the East, man, they were flexing their muscles. Both came out and set the stage for maybe a series in which you kind of understand what they're capable of, how deep they are, and certainly how much the home ice advantage matters. And Boston, crazy atmosphere, and that young team with some of those veterans that lead the way, they responded in a big way.
Number three.
Marchand around a check. Pasternak rips one. He scores! Brad Marchand, puck retrieval right circle. Escape the check. Hit Pasternak, tape the tape, and he wires it inside the near post.
Far point now, Krug. Krejci directing traffic. Far circle now to Brusque. Left of the net, Krejci. They score! David Krejci may have banked that in off of Freddie Anderson. A power play goal. 5-1 Bruins.
We have built a very nice bond over the season. It started early on, and that really allows you to play better on the ice when you have the chemistry that we have in the room. So it's nice. We all love each other. We stick up for each other, and we want to win for one another. So it's nice.
The voice of Brad Marchand, one of those veterans who's been around for a long time, NBC Sports Network, you hear the crowd in Boston behind him. He had a goal and an assist. In fact, five different Bruins scored, and there were three power play goals. Tuukka Rask, who allowed a goal early by the Maple Leafs to tie it up. After that, it was all Boston. He stopped 26 shots after that. And 38 seconds left in the second period, you got the Pastrnak goal. And so that was kind of the explosion. A couple more goals after that, and they looked really dominant. Exactly what they wanted to start out, especially after not playing well versus the Panthers in their final game of the regular season when they had the chance to steal the number one seed. Speaking of the top seed in the East, yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Bolts, picked up right where they left off as the top scoring team in the NHL this season.
Johnson shoots, deflect the wide right. Braden Point on the rebound, loses Mueller by the net. Marco Mueller is checked by Point. A steal, Palat, left corner. But Johnson! Score! Tyler Johnson! He makes it 2-0 with 28.5 seconds left in the first.
The five different players scored for the Lightning as well. Both these teams really deep. Tyler Johnson, he doesn't care at all about the style points. He's just about getting the pucks in the back of the net, and it worked. Dave Mishkin there on the Tampa Bay Radio Network. Before that, the Bruins Radio Network. Forgive me for not mentioning that. So what jumped out to me is that the top two teams in the East really showed you what they're capable of, and I know it's one game. It doesn't carry over, but they appear to be right now in situations where they're comfortable, they're confident, and obviously having the home ice advantage, being able to set the stage early in their series, a lot like the Penguins. That's also a plus. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. So the top two teams in the East flexing their muscles. And then you had a completely different scenario for the Washington Capitals. Now, they're not the President's Trophy winners this year. That belongs to the Predators. We'll get to them. But still a lot of expectations and a lot of disappointment that you would think would stick with the Capitals, the guys who've been there for the last couple of years, like Alex Ovechkin. But he's just one example. Maybe flying under the radar a little bit. And they had a lead late in the third period against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Number two.
Tom Wilson getting the puck on the near wall. He got it to the blue line. Atkinson kept it in. Gives to Panarin. Back to Jones with a shot. And he scores! I'm Jonesing for a power play goal. And there it is. 3-3. The game is tied. Got it ahead to Artemi Panarin. Up the left wing side. He comes into the Capital zone. He goes with speed. Gets to the front of the net. He shoots and scores! And I got two words for you. Game over!
Bob McElligott on the Columbus Blue Jackets radio network. Yeah, late power play after a penalty against the Capitals, and Seth Jones scores in the final 5 minutes of regulation, ties up Washington on their own ice, and then this incredible move by Artemi Panarin. He actually switched hands as he got closer to the goal and was able. He went from the backhand to the forehand 6 minutes into overtime. Sudden death, our first sudden death of this NHL postseason. So credit the Blue Jackets for coming back. They fell behind on a pair of power play goals early. The Capitals looked like they were going to be in control, in cruise control, actually. And here come the Blue Jackets scrapping their way back into it and then stealing one, actually stealing away the home ice advantage from Washington.
We're calm in the sense that there was two power play goals, but we hadn't really dictated any play. So once we got our game going, we felt confident we could get one, and Boone makes a hell of a play to Winnie and kind of gets our game going from there. And, we used to get some huge power play goals, and that's what you need this time of year. Our power play bailed us out, and some big kills at big times and blocks and saves, and that's playoff hockey.
Captain Nick Foligno setting the tone for toughness. Early in the third period, he takes a puck to the visor. I mean, it was scary. You didn't realize right away that it was on the visor, that the visor took the brunt, but that's the whole point of wearing one. He was bloodied as he skated off the ice. He was able to get up after a minute, skate off the ice. Only missed a few shifts until they fixed his visor and patched him up, and he was back out there on the ice and was there for the overtime win. His comments post-game on Fox Sports Ohio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. I mentioned the President's Trophy winners the Nashville Predators, who, of course, made it to the Stanley Cup Final for the first time in franchise history last year and have been on a mission all season long. Well, they actually gave up the first goal in their opener against Colorado, so they were trailing 1-0. And then still in the third period, this was a tie game between the Preds and the Avs.
Number one.
Predators win the draw. Johansson got it back to Ellis. Arvidsson backhands out, and that shot, and the tip of the score! The Predators with Philip Forsberg in front take a 3-2 lead. Here's Forsberg across the line, tries to stick handle there, and got the shot, he scored! What a spectacular goal! Philip Forsberg turned it inside out! It's 4-2 Nashville.
It's going to be a tight series all the way. I mean, they're, as I said, they got a really, really good, fast team, and obviously did a lot of things to stop us in the first and second, but I think we got going the longer the game went on.
Try to process this for Forsberg as you hear him there post-game on the NBC Sports Network. Predators end up tacking on a third goal in the third period, and they win going away 5-2. Forsberg passes the puck to himself through his own legs and then through a rookie defenseman's legs. Welcome to the NHL postseason, no? My gosh, it was dazzling. So I hope that you can go back and maybe see the GIF or check out the highlights from the Predators. Love it when those fans in Nashville go nuts, so it's always cool. They're just such a bright shade of yellow. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Can I add a bonus? Only because you know how much I love it when guys finally get the opportunity after they've waited for so long. Now, we talked about it with Andre Ingram of the Lakers earlier this week. Why? Because he had spent 10 years in the G League and the D League before finally getting a shot in the NBA. So not quite the same situation for Evander Kane, but here's his ninth year in the NHL. First time in the postseason, and only because he got traded to the Sharks at the deadline in February. So this guy has packed up his locker. He's gone home every single year in his NHL career with no playoffs to show for it, never having tasted this particular stage, the Stanley Cup postseason, never using the hashtag because it's the cup. And there he is with the Sharks on the road at Anaheim. And what does he do? Well, he makes the most of his opportunity. No doubt. He scores two goals, two of them. In fact, they were the first two for the San Jose Sharks. And so his first playoff game, his first two postseason goals. And it was cool to see the smile on his face after the Sharks had secured the shutout against the Ducks.
It's game one. Obviously, it was nice to finally get out in the playoff atmosphere. And obviously nice to get my first one in the playoffs too. So now the focus is on game two.
A cool moment. So yeah, the Sharks also steal the home ice advantage, but neat for Evander Kane, who after nine seasons gets to understand what all the fuss is about. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. And then if you're on Twitter, check out our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. Somehow, Tom managed to find a Facepalm Friday gift that features O.J. Simpson. I'm just going to – he didn't even realize that I said to him, is that O.J.? So it's a throwback. You'll want to check it out on our show Twitter. I always love it when you send me pictures of Facepalm moments or you send me your own Facepalm moments from the week. It's one of our cool things that we do to make you laugh here on the weekends, or going into the weekend, I should say. And so last hour, it was all this drama around Khloe Kardashian and Tristan Thompson and him getting booed by his own fans because of some photos, some racy photos that have surfaced as his bae was about to give birth. We'll leave that where it is. I think we spent enough time on that. You know me, I'm not a big fan of the personal drama. However, speaking of personal drama, it was that particular strain of conversation that drew the ire of one of our recent callers. So he decided he would pick this bone with me and call me earlier in the week.
Freaky, frivolous, or flat out flubbed.
Most valuable player means the player most valuable.
A look back on the frankly foolish feedback of the week. It's time for Facepalm Friday.
Tony's in Atlanta. Tony, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Amy.
Hey.
You know what? You really messed up this time. Because you
you attacked Tiger Woods. What was it when he got pulled over for drunk driving? You said he was a drunk. He's no good. This, that, and the other.
No, I did
and
not.
It turned out that you were wrong.
I never said that, man.
He was the next 2 or 3 days and had to apologize.
Don't make crap up, man.
You said he was at the first reporting when Tiger Woods got pulled over was he was drunk. Fake news.
No,
you
not
went
fake
out
news.
For half your show and you
okay,
called
Tony.
Him a-
Bye, Tony. Those are just the highlights. Tony went on and on. I don't know if this is his first time ever calling national radio, but it was first time on our show, and that's what he used it on. Yeah, here's what the fake news is. I do not call people drunks just for no reason. And if you remember the original police report, actually the original police report indicated that Tiger Woods smelled of alcohol and that he was had failed field sobriety tests. And so we didn't realize at the time, or the officers didn't realize at the time, that it was painkillers and all kinds of prescription drugs. But I don't call people drunks. I'm extremely careful. And that's why I always cite police reports and other reports, because if it turns out to be wrong, I don't want to be the one who gets blamed for spreading the incorrect information. So poor Tony. And then I love the fact that he was like, you had to spend all this time apologizing. I mean, just make stuff up. That's it. That's the best you got.
You
I mean,
really did it this time.
We don't do enough on this show for you to react to. You actually have to make up some material, and that's the reason that you call. Oh, it doesn't even sound like me. I don't call people drunks, and I don't apologize either. I'm pretty careful about what I say. I apologize when I screw up. I don't apologize for that kind of stuff. Oh, dear. Poor Tony. Hashtag Facepalm Friday. All right, on Twitter, A-Law Radio, 1 hour to go until Friday. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.